Sri Parikshit Uvacha. Sri Parikshit Maharaj said, Sangsthapanaya, for the establishment. Dharmasya, of religious principles. Sometimes you hear that Prabhupada is called a Samstakacharya. So Samstak means to establish or to found. You know, just like in English we say the founder acharya. So the Sanskrit equivalent of that is Samstak, that he's establishing or founding. Prasamaya, for the subduing. Itarasya, of the opposite. Cha, and Avatirna, descended upon this earth.
He indeed.
Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Angshena, with his plenary expansion. Who's that? Sri Balaram. Jagat, of the entire universe. Ishvara, Lord. Sa, He. Katam, how. Dharma Setunam, of the restrictive codes of moral behavior. Vakta, the original speaker. Karta, the executor. Abhirakshita, the protector. Pratipam, contrary. Acharat, behaves. Brahman, O Brahmana. Shukadeva Goswami. Para, of others. Dhara, the wives. Avimarshanam, touching. It's an interesting verse, this one. Translation. Parikshit Maharaj said, O Brahmana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord of the universe, has descended to this earth along with his plenary portion to destroy irreligion and re-establish religious principles. Indeed, he is the original speaker, follower, and guardian of moral laws. How then could he have violated them by touching other men's wives? Very interesting question. Who knows the answer? Why is Bhikkhu Maharaj asking this question? It sounds like he's in doubt about the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
For all of us.
For all of us, yeah. That's definitely one answer. Anyone else have any ideas?
To display true love. To display true love.
To display true love, another idea.
To remove the mundane understanding of us.
To
remove the misconception about To
remove misconceptions. Sudami, you had a point?
Because there are sages in the audience who are doubting, like uneasy or doubting.
Yeah, exactly. There are actually people present there. There were not everyone present in that arena was a pure, unalloyed devotee of the Lord. There were many, many people gathered there. And they came from all different backgrounds and understandings. And as Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur points out, that there were many jnanis and karmis there. And for one who's attracted by jnana and karma, they cannot understand the transcendental nature or activities or pastimes or form or anything of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Rupa Goswami, he points this out in the Nectar of Devotions, is Atasi Krishna Namadi Navavet Graya Mandriye Seva Mukhi Hijivaro Swayamivas Paratya Daha. He explains that one cannot understand the transcendental nature of the name, form, quality, and pastimes of the Lord through materially contaminated senses. And we see here that someone who's approaching the Lord through jnana or karma, or one who's a jnana, not necessarily even approaching the Lord, one who's trying to understand the Vedic knowledge, one who's a jnana or a karma, their senses are contaminated. They're contaminated by this desire for knowledge, this desire for fruit, gain, etc. like that. And this is pointed out by Krishnadas Kaviraj. He says, Krishna Bhakta Niskama Ata Eva Shanta. He says, Krishna Bhakta, devotee Krishna, Niskama, no material desires. Not without desires, because a living entity cannot be without desires. Because Niskama means, if you look at it, you know, just on like an ABC sort of translation, it means no desire. Without desire. But that's not possible. A living entity can't be without desire. Because the living entity was without desire, living entity wouldn't exist. And that's the nature of living entities, we desire. So he says, therefore, the Acharyas explain that. That means there's no material desires. Just like we say that Krishna is nirguna. So some people who are the jnanis and the karmis, they don't understand. So they say Krishna has no qualities. Therefore he has no form. He's formless. He's impersonal. And they misunderstand because they're not bhaktas. Only a bhakta can actually understand. And Krishna, he explains that so clearly in the Gita. There's a few, but there's two verses. Bhakti Mam Vijana Yavan Yas Chastatama, and there's Bhakti Tvanam. He explains clearly in the Gita that it is only by devotional service can I be understood as I am standing before you. Krishna's clearly revealing this to us in the Gita, that if you want to understand me in truth as I am, tatvata, then you perform devotional service. And this is the point Krishna's Kaviraj makes. He says, Krishna Bhakta Niskama Ata Eva Shanta. He says, certainly they are peaceful. Because that, why? Because they have no material desire. They have plenty of desires. You know, there's so many desires to serve Krishna, so many desires to please Krishna, to please Krishna's devotees. But no material desires, because material desires just simply cause agitation to the mind, the senses, etc. And he says, Bhukti Mukti Siddhikam Sakali Ashanta. But the materialistic people, the bhuktis, those who are after material, like fruitive gain, material, you know, they want to satisfy the material desires, they want material enjoyment, bhuktis. Muktis, those who are after liberation. They want to merge into the Brahman or something. And why do they want to do that? Why do they want to merge? Why do they want liberation? Because they perceive material life as suffering. I'm not happy here. Therefore, it's selfish. They're simply interested in satisfying the self. So bhukti, mukti, both satisfy siddhi. They're after material perfection. They want all these different cities, anima, lagima, prakti, all these different types of cities. They want these material perfections. Why? So they can enjoy themselves, so they can control others. You know, there's one of the cities, it's called, I forgot what the name is, there's eight of them. And there's one of the cities where you can control the mind of others. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can exploit them. Why would you do that? So you can enjoy. You can enjoy yourself, you can enjoy them, whatever. You know, so just do it so you can enjoy. And so he says, Bhukti, Mukti, Siddhi, Kami. They're all lusty. Imagine that even people are after liberation. And we see that it talks about in the Shastra, there's Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, the four goals of life. Moksha, liberation, is one of the goals of life. But according to Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, these people are actually lusty. Because why? Why are they after moksha? They're just interested in it for themselves. So it's just another kind of sense gratification, because they're only interested in satisfying themselves. Their goal of moksha is not to satisfy Krishna, because if they're interested in satisfying Krishna, as I believe it's a prayer by Bilva Mangal Thakur, where he says that, you know, for one who's actually devoted to the Lord, the liberation stands at the door with folded hands saying, how can I serve you? This is indicating that the devotee is actually not interested. Liberation, she's standing there waiting, saying, whatever you want, I'll give it to you, whatever you want. You know, when you want liberation, I'll give it to you. So the devotee is not interested in these things, because the devotee is interested only in serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see this really interesting story in the 8th canto, when... what's his name? Chitra. You're the one who had the son that was killed?
Chitraketu,
thank you. Chitraketu, he was travelling, this was later on, he was after he achieved his realization from the preaching of his son. And he was travelling around the universe, and then he came upon Lord Shiva with Parvati sitting on his lap and all the sages, you know. So Parvati sitting on his lap and all the sages sitting around, he's instructing the sages. And Chitraketu, he thought was a very interesting sight. And he started to laugh. So Parvati cursed him that he would take a very vulnerable birth. And then he got down from his chariot and he said, "Thank you, my dear mother, for correcting me and giving me this curse." And she was like bewildered. How come, you know, he's not, you know, because he was also himself a powerful, you know, personality. He could have counter-cursed Parvati and etc. like that, but he didn't. He just thanked her for correcting his mentality. And so Parvati was bewildered, so then she asked Lord Shiva. And he responded, he says, "Narayana Parasema, Nirnakutaschen Vipati, Svaka Apavagana Keshu Apitulyata Dashina." That for devotees of the Lord, whatever condition of life they find themselves in, they're completely satisfied. He says, "Naraka Apavagashu." So Naraka means the hellish planets, Apavaga, heavenly planets. You know, or even liberation. They don't mind. They don't care what situation they find themselves in. Because they're simply engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whether they go to the hellish planets, they'll serve Krishna. When they go to the heavenly planets, they'll serve Krishna. They don't mind. Because for them, they're always engaged in Krishna's service, and this is the essence. So devotees are satisfied in their service to Krishna, whatever it is. You know, whether it's some, you know, glorious service, or whether it's some simple service. The fact of it is all service is glorious because it's connected with Krishna. Anything that is connected with Krishna is glorious. And it becomes, because of that connection with Krishna, it becomes wonderful. It becomes glorious. And in the same way, I was talking with one of our devotees the other day about this. It's like sometimes we get these important services to do. You know, we may be, controlling a whole festival or something like that and running around, and we have to give instruction to so many different devotees. And sometimes the tendency is there, because of our material conditioning, because of our contamination, we start to think, "Oh, I'm doing an important service. I must be an important person." But what is it that makes that service important? Because it's connected with you, or because it's connected to Krishna? If it's only because of connection with you, then it's insignificant, like everything else in this material universe. Yeah. Even we see these so-called big people, like the President of the United States, big person. But, you know, what is he? He's just another conditioned living entity, and because he's engaged in this managing this big country where so many simple activities perform, he's going to take 1/6 the karma for all the simple activities that are performed in that country. Can you imagine that in a place like the United States, where 6 million chickens are killed every single day? And that's just chickens, not to mention, you know, the sheep and the cows and all the other living entities, and how many abortions there are in that country, and how many animals are tortured in cells in the name of scientific advancement. You know, in these laboratories, they torture and kill so many living entities. You know, the eggs that are eaten, I mean, he's got a share in all of that. Mm-hmm. 1/6, according to Shastra, according to Manasamiti, he gets 1/6. So is that such a good position to be in? Yet he's thinking he's a very important man. Where's he going to in his next life? Who can say? Not a nice place. So the thing is, like, when something is connected with Krishna, when something has some bundle with Krishna, it becomes very significant. If there is no connection with Krishna, then all our activities are simply materialistic activities. And they will cause bondage. As Krishna points out very clearly in the Gita, he says, "Yagata kamanonyata lokoyam karma bandhana." That if everyone performs activity, you cannot. This is also pointed out clearly in the third chapter of the Gita. As Krishna says, "Nahi kaschit chanamapi." This is chanam, means for a moment. "Nahi kaschit chanamapi jatu tishtati karma krit." It's amazing how fast they go. Sarva Jaya is the last one. And yeah, so Krishna is explaining that the living entity in this material world, he's forced to act by the merged material nature. Cannot refrain from acting even for a moment. Even for one moment, you can't stop this activity. So living entities are forced to act. So we can act in different ways. We can act for Krishna, or we can act not for Krishna. You can say for Maya, for the self, or whatever. Basically means, if you're not acting for Krishna, it's acting for Maya. You can't sort of have, there's no grey areas. It's either you do it for Krishna or you do it for Maya. There's nothing in between, really. So the living entity is forced to act. So whatever activity you do has some kind of repercussion in one way or another. If you're doing it for the self, if you're doing it for the extended self, meaning family, country, whatever, the whole humanity, for the plants, for the trees, whatever it is you want to do. If you're doing these things that are not directly connected with Krishna, then they will bring about bondage, karma bandhana. But if you do these activities for the satisfaction of Krishna, then they'll bring about liberation. Like I said, there is repercussions no matter what your activity is. Yet when you do it for Krishna, there's no further bondage. The same activity, you do one activity, you do it for yourself, then there's so much entanglement that comes. Like just for instance, you may be working in a job, you're doing it for yourself, you're doing it for whatever, whatever your reasons are, not for Krishna. Of course, devotees, when they work, they're doing to maintain a family of devotees. So this is considered devotional service. Even though you may be working in some, what seems to be a very super mundane job, very, very mundane, boring work. But because you're doing it to maintain a family of devotees, it's devotional service. Yet the same activity done by a materialistic person, they're doing that activity simply to indulge their senses. So, the whole week they work so hard, so Friday or Saturday night or whatever it is, they go out, they get intoxicated, they eat meat, they do all these types of things, and they think this is a wonderful life. And so this is causing bondage for them. And in many different ways, it's not just because of the simple activities they're doing. In many different ways it causes bondage. Just like, for instance, they go out, they work, they get the money. This money has come from someone who has performed some kind of simple activities. Just like, for instance, you may be selling some product, right? And some butcher comes and purchases your product, right? Now this money is literally blood money, because he's gained that money by killing living entities. And it's described in the Shastras that all the persons who are involved in the killing of an animal share in the suffering of that death. The person who kills, the person who transports, the person who sells, the person who buys, the person who cooks, and the person who eats all have to get some percentage of that reaction. And it's said that for a person who kills a cow, for as many hairs as there are on the back of a cow, the one must be killed in a similar way, that many births. You mean, how many hairs are on the back of a cow? Millions upon millions upon millions of hairs are there. And for a person who is engaging in such simple activity, they also must experience that. The same thing. As many hairs as there are, they take that many births. So for all those people who are involved, they have to share in that. And they get their share. They get their quantity of hairs that they have to get reactions for. Yeah? So, if for instance someone, a materialistic person is out there working, and he's selling a product, and he gets money from a butcher, and the butcher's the one who's killing the animal, he's got so much share in that, in that simple reaction. So for someone who's taking money from such a person, then they're getting money from that, they also have to take the karma that comes from that. Yeah? And then the activity, so the money comes, and you get reaction from the money, you get attachment to the money. This is my money, and I'm going to spend it how I want to enjoy myself. And then when you spend the money, you spend it on some kind of enjoyment of some form or other. So you get entangled in that also. You get entangled in the power of having the money, because money means power. When you've got money, I can buy things, I can do things, I can go places. So there's so much entangling there. And then when they spend it on simple activities, they indulge in the simple activities, then that's also entangling. So the whole thing is entangling. But if you take the same thing and you do it for Krishna, then so many things are benefiting from that. Just like if, for instance, we go down to the market and we buy some fruit to offer to Krishna. So many things happen. We have the money, right, which we're attached to. It's natural. People are attached to money. But you take that money, you spend that money, you go down to the market and you buy some fruit to offer to Krishna. So you become purified of the attachment to the money because you're using the money in Krishna's service. Then you're taking some fruit, and instead of becoming attached to fruit because you're offering it to Krishna, you're also becoming purified of that attachment to enjoying. And when it's offered to Krishna, it becomes prasadam. So then by eating prasadam, you become purified of the attachment to the eating process, but also by eating Krishna prasad, your body becomes spiritualized. And also the living entity whose fruit that was also receives the benefit of offering the fruits of their endeavor to Krishna. The person who grew the fruit, the person who transported the fruit, the person who sold you the fruit. Everyone becomes benefited. So the transcendental process, it's so wonderful that anyone who has any connection with it becomes benefited. So we see, getting back to the first verse I was quoting, it says, Atahasi Krishna Namadi Navaved Grayamuri Sevan Mukihi Jivado Swayamivas Paratyadaha. That no one can understand the transcendental nature of the name, form, quality, and pastimes of the Lord through materially contaminated senses. It's just not possible, because what happens is you have this conditioning, you have this perception. Just like we see, a living entity in a dog body, right? Even though they're a jiva, pure spirit soul, because they have this conditioning of dog, then they see everything as dog, as a dog does. Right? And you just look at their behavior. Abominable behavior. But they think it's wonderful, you know? They come up to you and their tail's wagging like this and they're so excited and happy. Yeah? They're so, you know, so consumed in dog behavior. Yeah? Yet when we look at exactly the same things as the dog looks at, then we think differently. We react differently. Why? Because we have a different conditioning. Yeah? Or you see, you know, like so many other, you can look at all the different living entities and you look at the way they see things and the way they respond to certain stimuli. Because of their conditioning, they respond. Because of the influence of the modes of material nature. So the Prabhupada describes it very plainly. He says there's three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. You mix them. 3 by 3 means 9. 9 by 9 is 81. And you mix and mix and mix like this, and you wind up with 8,400,000 species of life. This is how all the life and the species of life come about, is by mixings of the different modes of material nature. And according, you know, as it says, Nahi Kaschit Chinamapi Jatu Kishta, according to the contamination, according to the mixings of the modes of material nature that are affecting the living entity, then they respond in a particular way. It's just like when we see a tree, for instance, what do? We sit under it and appreciate the shade. We see the fruit, we pick the fruit, we offer it to Krishna, we eat. What does a dog do when he sees a tree? Particularly a male dog. He sees it as a watering post. You just see it in different ways. Or a bird, they see it as a place to make a home. So according to the different contaminations, you know, that we have in the modes of the material nature, we see things in a different way. And we respond in a different way and we become affected in a different way. It's just like with light, when you put, I don't know if anyone's ever seen, I'm sure many of you have seen, you know, when they do these shows or the big public performances on the stage and they have all the coloured lights. So when you put a filter in front of the light, right, say for instance you put a yellow filter in front of the light comes out yellow. But actually the light, full, you know, the full spectrum of light, it's white. It looks white, but what happens is that the yellow filter blocks out the other colours and only allows the yellow spectrum to come through. So in the same way, these material bodies, they act like filters. And they cause us to see the material nature in a particular way. So this is what he's saying. Atasi Krishna Namadi Namavetrayam. Because we have this particular conditioning, we're unable to see the transcendental nature of the Lord. Because we're seeing it through this condition, we're seeing it as is. Because I have a material body. And this is quite a common misconception. You see that many materialistic people, they think that because, you know, I have a body, I have these limitations. Krishna has a body, or God has a body, therefore he must have the same limitations. Otherwise, the other way they look at it is because, well, the material body has limitations, therefore God cannot have a material body because he has no limitations. And you see, they get all these different misunderstandings. You know, one group may believe, oh, God has a body. I have a body. My body's limited, therefore God's body must be limited. They impose these conditions upon Krishna. But actually you cannot impose anything upon Krishna because he's the supreme personality of Godhead, the original unlimited person. And he has no limit. And the other one is like some religionists, they feel that because God is without limit, the body has limit, therefore God cannot have a body. This is a common impersonalistic misconception. Again, they cannot understand the difference between matter and spirit. Spirit is unlimited. And the unlimited person can do anything and take any form he likes. And we see Prahlad Maharaj, he says, when he's praying to the Lord, he says, my dear Lord, you have appeared in all species of life. He's appeared in every one of the 8,400,000 species of life. Every single one of them. There's an ant incarnation of Krishna. There's an amoeba incarnation of Krishna. Now, I don't know what the activities are, but the fact is that Krishna has appeared in every species of life. And as he says, Paratanaya Saranam Vinishchaya Chidushkutam. So he's appearing in those different species to benefit the living entities, to give them the opportunity to become God conscious. He does this always. So, through our materially conditioned senses, we cannot understand the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he's beyond this material perception. He's beyond our material understanding. You just can't catch it. Because the nature of living entities is we want to quantify everything. We want to measure everything and see how big and how powerful it is. You see that, They try to estimate how much energy is coming out of the sun, or how powerful a wave is, or, this motor can produce so many brake horsepower and it can do this. They try to measure and quantify everything. And as long as we try to measure and quantify God, we'll never understand him. Because he cannot be measured or quantified. Because even if you could at one point measure him, at the next point he'd be greater. Because he's unlimited. He's constantly expanding. Unlimited means there is no limit. Means you cannot measure. Just like mathematically, there is a concept called infinity. So what does infinity mean? It means one with unlimited zeros. There's no end to it. It just keeps growing and growing and growing. So, you get that concept, then God is beyond even that concept. You cannot quantify him in any way, shape or form. So, to try to understand him with material contaminated senses is not possible. And then Rupa Goswami, he goes on to explain, he says, but when one engages in trance, he says, for Swayam Eva, this Swayam, this original form, Eva, certainly, Spurata, I can't remember what that means. But he's saying that when one engages in transcendent, when the senses become saturated, not just engaging in devotional service, but when the senses become saturated by transcendental loving service to Krishna. So you know it's like when you wash your clothes and they become saturated. Not just a little bit wet like you get some spray on or something. When the clothes are completely saturated. So we need to become like that with devotional service. And he says, Sevan Mukhi Hi Jiva Do. So you know what this jiva means? It means the tongue. So this process begins with the tongue. And that's so nice. What do we do with our tongue? We eat Krishna Prasad and we vibrate the tongue. So this is how nice and simple this process of devotional service is. Is it simply by chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra? What does Lord Chaitanya say? He says, Harinama, 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 Eva Keva Lama. Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Gatila Nyajaha. He says this chanting of the holy name, chanting the holy name, chanting the holy name, is the only way to overcome this nature in this age. This most abominable age. So, as the sages in Anamishranya point out, in this Iron Age of Kali, people are lazy, quarrelsome, unlucky, misguided, short-lived, and above all, always disturbed. And it's interesting to note, if anyone has been following the news in the last, the last 10 years even, the disturbance is just increasing more and more and more and more and more every single day. It's getting more and more difficult. And the disturbance is manifesting in so many different ways, just like there's fighting in Israel just recently, Lebanon and Gaza, and then there's been this terrorist activity, supposed terrorist activity. There's no actual evidence, but they are saying there was some terrorist threat there. Which is kind of interesting. Now they're imposing all these heavy restrictions upon airplanes. You're not even allowed to take a bottle of water on a plane anymore. Can you imagine that? You can't take a bottle of water with you. And you're not even allowed to take your jumper, are you? Yeah. As much as you came back from England just recently, they wouldn't let her take a jumper with you. What's she going to do? Hang herself in the luggage rack or something? It's just getting, because the people, you can understand from their point of view, they're flying these planes, right? And they've got people, trying to blow the planes up. I remember coming out of America just after, 3 days after 9/11, and the air hostesses were so on edge. You know, they're just terrified that someone's going to try and hijack their plane and fly it into a building or something like that. So you can understand from their perspective why they're doing that. But we see this is just another symptom of the age of Kali, how it is developing. And people are becoming more and more disturbed. So for this age, the Lord has made the process of devotional service so simple. All we have to do is chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare without offences. We have to give up the different aparas. Every morning we're hearing the Dasanama Purana. So we need to chant attentively. The most, and actually in the Harinam Chintamani, there's a book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur which was actually revealed to him in Revelation, you know, about Haridas Thakur. It's described how this inattention is the root of all offences. So if we chant attentively, then we'll avoid the other offences. We'll avoid criticism, etc., etc. But just by focusing on the whole thing, by hearing, focusing means that you hear what you're saying. And sometimes we see devotees in they're not actually hearing. We've got to hear the name. And Prabhupada described that when you're chanting the holy name and you're hearing the holy name, and Krishna is dancing on your tongue. If you hear clearly what is being said and focus on that. So this is the essence of the process of devotional service. And of course also the part that everyone likes is tasting Krishna prasada. It's such a simple process. He says, Seva Mukhi Jivado. So simply by this process of devotional service, which begins with the tongue, begins with the chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, begins with the taking Krishna Prasad, then the senses become transcendentally saturated. And just like when something is completely saturated, there's no room for anything else, it's just completely immersed. We become completely immersed in Krishna consciousness. There's no room for anything else. And in this way, then the transcendental nature of the name, fame, quality, activities of the Supreme Personality have become revealed to us. So this is the situation for the sages here that were also present, hearing Parikshit Maharaj, Sukadeva Goswami speaking to Parikshit Maharaj, is they had material desires. It says here, it's only a 5-line purport, it just says, these doubtful persons were karmis and gyanis and others who were not devotees of the Lord. So it's natural that if one is not a devotee of Krishna, when you hear about the extraordinary activities of Krishna, how he's in the forest in the middle of the night, engaging in so-called lusty affairs or lusty, pastimes with other people's wives. Everyone's going to think this is abominable. How can he do this? He's a debauchee. And even Radharani calls him a debauchee. In the last verse of the Shastakam, she says Lampato. She calls Krishna debauchee. Lampato means debauchee. This is a prayer by Radharani. Krishna says, what's that? You'll always be my Lord, birth after birth, whether you embrace me or tremble with me beneath your feet, because you're simply a debauchee. She's telling Krishna, yet you're always my Lord, it doesn't matter what you do to me. And this is actually the mood of devotion. It doesn't matter what you do to me, my Lord Krishna. And they have such surrender to Krishna. They don't really care what Krishna does. Just, you always remain my Lord. And so, a materialistic person cannot understand that. And we see, when we explain sometimes to people that we're servant, what does your name mean? They say it means I'm servant. I'm a servant of God. And how do most people respond to that? No master, no God. They have this thing in the Maharaj to say, in France they always say, I don't know French, so I don't know how to pronounce it, but it means basically no master, no God. And that's the nature of most people in this world, is they don't want any master. Because why? Because they think that I am the master. I am the enjoyer and controller of all I survey. I'm the boss here, and you do what I say. But this is not the mood of a devotee. The mood of a devotee is, I want to become Krishna's eternal servant. And whatever he wants me to do, I'm happy to do that. So we see here that that these doubtful persons, because they were not devotees of Krishna, because they could not understand the transcendental, because they did not engage in devotional service, then they could not understand the transcendental nature of the Lord's activities. Therefore, there was doubts in their minds, in their hearts, about Krishna being in the forest in the middle of the night, dancing with other people's wives. And we see, even in this day and age, we see people, those of us from India or who spent time in India, sometimes you see these Bhagavad Saptamas. They go on for 7 days and they discuss the pastimes of the Lord. In particular, they focus on the four chapters of the Rasa-lila in order to agitate their minds, to agitate their lusty desires so they can go and enjoy sex life with their wives or their girlfriends or whatever. They don't really have an interest in understanding the transcendental nature of the pastimes of the Lord. Because only a devotee can understand that, only one who's actually engaged in devotional service. And Prabhupada tells a very interesting story in this purport. There was a book written called Shah Jahan. And it was written by a Bengali man, whose name escapes me right now. Anyhow, so in this book, it's basically talking about the act. Shah Jahan, just in case you don't know, was the father of Aurangzeb. Aurangzeb was a rascal, basically. He was a demoniac. He wanted to become the ruler of the kingdom. And at that time, Aurangzeb, he was basically the emperor of India. And he was in Jaipur. And so Shah Jahan was actually quite a benevolent sort of a person, quite a nice ruler. Yet his son, Aurangzeb, wanted to become the ruler. So he killed his brothers and imprisoned his father. And the whole book describes how Aurangzeb's activities. And so a friend of the writer, he came to the writer of the book and he said, you should actually call this book Aurangzeb, because there's nothing in it about Shah Jahan. It's all about Aurangzeb's activities. And he said, no, actually, why it's called Shah Jahan is because this book is all about the sufferings he went through. Because his wife, Mamata, I think it was. Mamtash died, right? So he built the, because his son, Aurangzeb, kind of didn't think very highly of his father, because what happened was Mamtash, his wife, died, and he spent his fortune building the Taj Mahal as a memorial for his wife. So all his money went into that. And so his son imprisoned stuff, and so he had many sort of difficulties in his life, and this book was just describing all the difficulties he went through. And so Prabhupada explains that actually the author explained to him, he says, no, this is called Shah Jahan because his book is all about the difficulties of his life and the suffering he went through because of his son's nefarious activities. And so Prabhupada points out then that actually only the author can understand actually what the book is about. So in the same way, only a devotee of Krishna can actually understand Krishna. And this is the point that Krishna makes in the Gita in several different places. He says, only by devotional service can I be understood as I am standing before you in his two-handed form. And we see that here Krishna is. He's in the forest in Vrindavan in the middle of the night with other people's wives. And frankly speaking, ordinary people cannot understand this. They just think that Krishna is no different from any normal lusty young man who's just off, having illicit affairs with someone else's wife. They just equate him because this is their understanding, but therefore they, Atmavan Manyate Jagat. As I think, that's the way it is. The whole world is like that. But they're not realizing that these are the highest exchanges of love between God and his devotees. They're not realizing that there is no higher exchange. And it's not just like some sex affair. The gopis are surrendering more than anyone else. They're giving up everything completely. They have no desire for any prestige, no desire for any reward, no desire for any happiness. Because they know, I'm surrendering to Krishna here. I'm leaving behind my family, my relatives, everything like that. Where is there going to be any happiness? Because people, why do they have family? Because they're looking for happiness in family life. Why do they have children? Because they're going to have happiness from children. The relations, etc. Because they get happiness from all these exchanges. That's why we have relationships, because we get a certain kind of satisfaction. Yet the gopis are giving it all up. They don't care. We're going to get so much misery out of this. They're giving it all up simply to please Krishna. So unless we can become purified, unless we become saturated by transcendental loving service to the Supreme Person of the Godhead, we will not really be able to understand these things. We'll have some idea, but always there'll be misconceptions there. And of course, those who are not even trying to understand the karmis, the jnanis, the materialists, they just think it's just, you know, something they could write a dirty book about or something like that. And they just have such a mundane perception of it and just completely miss the point. And also, you know, that's why it's very important to read the commentaries of the Acharyas and have the commentaries of the Acharyas, particularly about these types of pastimes, because the tendency is there, because of our conditioned nature, is we will completely misunderstand what's happening here. And we'll just, you know, again, our minds will become agitated, our senses will become agitated, stuff like that. And it's recommended by Prabhupada and other acharyas that there's certain books, like Lalita Madhava and etc. like that, that neophyte devotees should not read, because the mind and the senses become agitated by reading these books. So generally, Prabhupada encourages us to read his books, because they're books that are written for common people like ourselves, for lay people, you know, who don't really understand the deeper implications or understandings of these pastimes. Okay, so thank you very much for patiently listening. Is there any questions or... Mahatmaji?
Probably, can you just tell us a bit more experiment of Do You Know Him, One? And... Katham Dharam Chetanam Bhakta Katha Vinchita. Tell us a bit more about the verse.
Which says, I was speaking on that. It says, Avatirna hi Bhagavan. It says, descended he, indeed, Bhagavan, the Supreme Person of Godhead. So it's just saying, you know, has descended to this earth. And then it goes on to saying, Angshina Jagadishwara, along with his plenary plenary portion. And then, Sakatam Dharma Setrunam. Sa means he, katam, how, dharma sitanam, or the restrictive codes of moral behavior. How has he, you know, not followed the codes of moral behavior? Now, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he explains this in an interesting way also, because the conversation is going backwards and forwards between Parikit and Sukadeva Goswami. And then Parikit says, well, obviously he couldn't have done it out of desire, because he's up to karma, he's self-satisfied. What desire does he have for anything? He's self-satisfied. And Sukadeva Goswami, he doesn't really deal with it directly. Yet one thing we can see, Prabhupada, there's a class Prabhupada gives, it's one understanding we can have, where Prabhupada's talking about Paratanaya Sadhanam Vinaschaya. He's giving class on that verse from the fourth chapter. Vinaschaya Chaduskutam Dharma Samstapanathaya Sambhalam Gay Gay. He says, to deliver the pious and not at miscreants as well as re-establish the principle of religion, I myself appear to let him after learning it. So we can see that, so Krishna is saying that in the Gita, yet actually what Prabhupada explains is that actually Krishna does not need to do these things. Krishna does not need to deliver the pious because they're already delivered. You know, devotees of Krishna are already delivered. Nor does he need to kill the demons, because the material energy can easily, just like we see, you know, the earthquakes and tsunamis and things like that. I mean, one tsunami, that was a couple of years ago, that tsunami, how many people were killed? So it's a couple of hundred thousand, I think. I'm not sure exactly how many, but from memory, I think it was a couple of hundred thousand people. Of course, in parts of India that were hit by the wave, you have no idea how many were killed, because there's no actual reckoning of how many people there are in India. Yet, you know, so very easily the material nature, Durga, can wipe out. And she has weapons for that purpose. She has choppers and swords and bows and arrows, and she cuts their heads off, and, you know, she's very powerful. So Prabhupada was explaining that Krishna doesn't need to, you know, to do this Vinaschaya Chaduskritam. He doesn't need to do that. Neither does he need to deliver the pious, because they've already delivered it because of the devotees of Krishna. So he explains that the reason Krishna appears is simply to engage in pastimes with his devotees, to satisfy their desires. So in the same way, we can see that here, that Krishna, he has no desire to fulfill, because he's self-satisfied. He's as I'm saying here, he's up to karma, and also up to Rama. He's self-satisfied within himself. He doesn't need anything in type of external stimulus to satisfy himself. So in order to please his devotees, he performs his pastimes. Now, because we see that several chapters ago now, when the gopis were doing Katyayani Vrata, what were they doing that Vrata for? What was the prayer? Yeah, that was they're offering praise to Katyayani. My dear Lord, my dear Mother Katyayani, you please make Lord Krishna our husband. So, they just had this desire to please Krishna. And we see in the pastime when Brahma stole the calves and the cowherd boys, some of the acharyas explain that during that year where Krishna manifests himself as all the calves and all the cowherd boys, that's when all the gopis got married to those same cowherd boys that Krishna was manifested as. So they got him as their husband. And then again, in that pastime where Lord Krishna stole all their clothes, so then they appeared naked before Krishna. So according to the Veda, the woman can only appear naked before her husband, in front of no one else. And so there's all these different pastimes, just like fulfilling the gopis' desires. Yet to an ordinary person, that's why the commentaries of the acharyas are vital. You cannot understand. Through our conditioned nature, you cannot. We just see that this young boy, he's luring all these pretty young girls out of the river naked. And even like it describes how there's a whole lot of cowherd boys went down with him to the bank of the Jamuna when the cowherd girls were coming out of the river. If an ordinary person sees that thing, they're going to think that these guys are just really debauchees. They're just so degraded. Even by today's moral standards, some people would be frowning upon these kind of activities. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that they're actually, they're toddlers. The children that went down with Krishna to the bank of the Jamuna were toddlers. They weren't making discrimination between girls and boys and naked and clothed. They don't, children when they're 1 year old don't have that kind of discrimination. So through the commentaries of the acharyas, we can understand, at least get some clear understanding of the essence of these pastimes, even though we may not be able to deeply understand. We get an understanding of the essence of it and understand that they are not ordinary material activities, but they are actually the deepest exchange of love between Krishna and his most elevated devotees. Anything else at all? Okay. Thank you very much. Kantra Shman Bhagavatam ki Sambhya Bhakti Miki Shri Prabhupada ki Jai Dai Gopremanandi.